You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Martin Scorsese was meant to direct Cyndi Lauper. But by the time Little Shop of Horrors opened in movie theaters in 1986, Frank Oz was director and Ellen Green was reprising her starring role as Audrey. Of course, that was after two preview screenings so legendarily disastrous that Warner Brothers was on the verge of not releasing the movie at all. One new ending later, a cult classic was born. But here's the thing. Does a cult classic heavy on gritty, bleak style that concludes in a tacked-on happy ending translate to movie magic? Or is avoiding the apocalypse a recipe for movie madness? I'm Mark Pikert, myself a strange and unusual plant, and this is Movie Musical Madness, the Mushnick Mash. Joining us today is a woman so talented, she must have appeared during a total eclipse of the sun herself, Tatiana Maslany. Sorry, Dr. Tatiana Maslany, DDS.
I loved that intro so much.
Tatiana Maslany, I cannot believe that I have somehow lured you into this podcast to talk about Little Shop of Horrors.
I did not need luring. This was like... It was like you put a little strange plant in the window. It was automatic. I just opened the door as Christopher Guest and did three lines.
Okay, so let's just get right into it.
Yeah.
That is such a strange sequence in the movie. The Christopher Guest specifically.
There are so many bizarre, amazing comedic cameos in this. And I don't know anything about his history in terms of like, was he a thing then?
I don't think so. I think it was just that thing of Frank Oz and then Steve Martin. And there was just this. And also, who knows how big of a fan these people were of the musical, because the musical had opened a few years before off-Broadway, took over New York City, became a huge, huge hit. And the people they were talking to play Audrey were Cyndi Lauper, Barbara Streisand, and Madonna.
No.
Yes.
Wait, and so when you said Martin Scorsese was meant to direct this movie?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Steven Spielberg was going to, I think, executive produce, and Scorsese was going to direct.
I have so many questions about all of this, because you also mentioned two failed screenings, which like, I don't know anything about the history of this movie. And the dumb thing when I said like, yeah, let's do Little Shop of Horrors, I've never seen it on stage. I just realized so I can't even compare and contrast.
That's one of the questions I wanted to bring up, because this is a musical that we all know, or like people our age, certainly, all know from this movie.
Yeah, totally.
Even though it is done a lot, one of my favorite exercises in, is to go on YouTube and Google High School Little Shop of Horrors and see how many people have all white urchins in the cast.
Oh my God. And they all do, I'm guessing.
And they all do. Yeah. They all do.
Yeah. I would love to see. I think the only like staged version I've seen on screen, well, there's a couple. So I've seen the like Jake Gyllenhaal, and I think he did it with Ellen Green in like a staged reading. Yeah. And then I've seen the MJ Rodriguez, her clip, which is, one of my biggest regrets is not seeing her do this performance.
I know. So that was happening at Pasadena Playhouse last fall 2019, at the same time that Jonathan Groff and Christian Borle and Tammy Blanchard opened off-Broadway.
Right.
In a production. And I did see that. I went to opening night.
What you just did was a little drinky action. Yes. For the viewers at home, the listeners.
Much like when Seymour goes on the radio show to talk about his strange and unusual looking plant. This is a visual medium, correct? Podcasts are visual.
Or you're going to want to do a bunch of audio gags. I'm sure you've got a bunch of props there, haven't you?
Well, I'm known for my prop work, yes. I actually trained Carrot Top, so...
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
did you also
that's my claim
physically
to fame.
Train him in the gym when he became really big for some reason? Muscularly?
Yes, I did. We were there together.
That's the most, that's one of the most shocking images in history, I think, is Carrot Top just jacked to shit.
In all of history, I agree. Carrot Top sporting some impressive musculature is one of the most shocking images I've ever seen. We're already so off topic and I adore it. Like, this is all I want. This is an excuse to just like be vaguely mean and make fun of people. Right. As far as I'm concerned. Okay. So, but you have seen it on stage, at least the stage version.
No, on screen.
No, but you saw Jake, didn't you? Or did you just see clips?
I saw Jake in a clip. That was it.
Got it.
So okay. I've seen little clips here and there, also similar to YouTube stalking the musical.
So very quickly, for you and for the listeners at home who might not have seen a stage production, it's very, very faithful to the original version. The big difference is this ends with them living, getting married, and moving somewhere that's green. In the original stage version, Audrey 2 eats them both and then takes over the planet.
That's amazing. So was that one of the failed screenings? Was that people were like, too sad?
So it's really interesting. They filmed a 23-minute finale of all of that happening, and they screened it, I think, in La Jolla first. And they fill out the cards, and the cards come back. And like anything below a 33, I think studios just refused to release it. They scored a 13.
Whoa!
And so they were like, okay, just to make sure that it's not this particular audience, let's do another one. So I think they did another one in Hollywood or somewhere else, and even worse. And Frank Oz said in an interview, he realized you can kill the leads in a stage musical and the actors come out and take their bow and everything is fine. But to kill the lead characters that movie audiences have watched for 90 minutes and fallen in love with and deeply care about is a completely different matter.
Interesting, because some of my favorite musicals do end in like they're sort of like the heaviest enders, or like, you know, like Into the Woods is one of my favorite musicals ever, and it like notoriously has such a painful ending.
Well, it's like if you stop Marie Antoinette 40 minutes in, happy ending. Right. Doing nothing but having parties and hanging out with her friends and her husband.
That's right.
So here's, and this is also talking about the ending, and people didn't want this bleak ending. Here's my question about the tone of this movie. And I want to be very clear. I really enjoy this movie. I watched it again last night. I really enjoy it. The performances are spot on. We're going to get into Rick Moranis, hot or not. So hot.
So hot.
Oh, uncomfortably hot.
Are you the only other person on the planet who feels this way? Because I've had a crush on him since I saw this musical. I was like, actually, since Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Probably since Ghostbusters.
They're like, he's too hunched over. He's basically like Iago, just like limping around.
It's a bit too goofy.
But this, I'm just like, are you hotter than Steve Martin?
I mean, you're talking about two of my greatest, like, other than Jim Carrey, probably when I was a kid, but like the two men who created my, you know, my interest, like what became my type in crushes, for sure.
I'm deeply concerned. But I also need to go quickly on a sidebar to say Jim Carrey and Liar Liar.
Yeah. I mean,
is
beautiful.
So sexy.
He's so hot. For me, it's the mask, unfortunately.
You know, I gave you an opportunity to walk back the Jim Carrey.
No, I went straight for it.
You really doubled down on that. Yeah. Good for you. I respect.
Thank you. Thank you.
So the tone of this movie is interesting because it goes back to the first thing we said, the Christopher Guest moment, because his deadpan, very like 1950s PSA, like educational video performance is so at odds with the other three performances in that scene. And it's not a choice for all of the characters. It feels very much like Frank Oz and company said, we have all these amazing funny friends. Let's just get them to come in for a day and do their thing.
Yes.
I mean, Bill Murray is a perfect example.
Yes. Like that monologue he gives feels like it could only be him. I was thinking about when I was watching him do it because he throws it away so completely while still making like huge physical choices. But it is really tossed like in that amazing Bill Murray, you know, style. Like it's not over the top. It kind of could exist in a different film.
All improvised.
No.
Yeah.
No.
His entire scene is improvised.
I have a fourth crush to add.
Okay, so speaking of that, there is something that I need while we're on Bill Murray.
Yeah.
That scene, I do not remember as a child how sexual he makes that scene.
Oh, yeah. It's all S&M, isn't it? It's all like...
So it's not just like, oh, I like pain. Like, oh, that feels nice. It's just like deeply orgasmic.
Yeah, he's saying thank you repeatedly.
Yes.
It's yeah. And it's and there's like full commitment to it. There's zero wink in it.
No. And I think that that's what's really remarkable about the performances across the board in this movie. There is no winking.
No. Even Audrey, who is like Ellen Green, is like doing, you know, massive. Like I was trying to do her voice last night and I was like, that is hard on the throat. That is deeply difficult on the throne. And she's like huge, but I believe every second. Like, I'm like, yes. That's a real person. Yeah.
And so I think that's a testament maybe to Frank Oz having worked on the Muppets for so long that he understands how to get humanity out of over the top, like literally non-human performers.
Yes. You think, I always think about puppetry being like the most, the best acting because there's so little movement or like there's such specificity to the movement and like restriction to the movement that a puppet can do like you're saying with Rick Moranis, like his hunched over thing. But like if a puppet did like a tiny hunch in a scene, you'd be like, oh, you'd feel everything. Like there's just such tiny little nuanced movements that translate to like huge emotion and you know what I mean? Storytelling.
And I think that that's also really a testament to Frank Oz working with Ellen Green, who did this show for hundreds of performances off Broadway. This doesn't feel like something that she's walking through. This feels very much like a fresh and a movie performance. This is not like, I'm just going to, although there is that moment in the reprise of Suddenly Seymour where Rick Moranis is singing to her and she's facing him and then he's crooning very sweetly and then she opens her mouth and gulps in air and turns full front to the camera totally. To belt.
Totally. And I think that's what I love about the movie too, is that it doesn't pull any, it's like, it honors the fact that it was a stage piece. Like it loves that. And it allows for that to be like continued into the, as much as it is cinematic, like it, there's something about it that does feel like we're on a soundstage and like, you know what I mean? Like this rain machine is, do you know what I mean? There's like a nod to that.
Well, and there's an interview where Frank Oz said, I didn't want to do anything on location. I didn't want to break the spell of the atmosphere that this world has to exist in to be taken seriously as a movie. And I think that that was exactly right. If you see them on an actual New York City street, then the juxtaposition of that and the Audrey 2 is too much. Like you can't compute that and it feels false. But if you create this exaggerated, I mean, also this is one of the grittiest movie musicals I can think of other than maybe Sweeney Todd.
Right.
30 years later.
Right. I mean, Les Mis is pretty heavy, but it's like, it's heavy from the start. Like there's zero reprieve from it. That it's just like, Whereas this kind of navigates many different tones.
Well, and there's also just something about like the cinematography and the set dressing. I mean, I can't imagine who... So I have notes. One of the first notes is... The saddest florist ever. This is the saddest florist shop I've ever seen.
Totally.
He comes in and asks for $100 worth of roses. They don't have any roses.
Where did these roses come from?
Were they in the back?
Yeah, we don't see many plants in this plant shop.
The only thing sadder than the initial florist shop is the funeral arrangement that Audrey makes, where she just throws glitter onto some lilies.
I love that about her. That's my favorite character trait. thinks a funeral arrangement is.
I mean, that is also my one deal breaker with a character. And I let it slide here because it's heightened. But you can murder people. You can deal drugs. You can do whatever you want. You have to be good at your job, though.
Yeah.
The minute you are bad at your job. That's why I had such a hard time with Fargo season one. I was like, everyone's so bad at their jobs.
The thing I had trouble with season one of Fargo was the jump at the end when we miss out on all of their kissing. I'm like, you built so much kissing tension that we don't even see their courtship.
No, you just get married and preggers.
Yeah, no, I was out when they did that. I really wanted that tension to be released. Slow
did
valve.
Did you finish it? There were only like two episodes left.
Yeah, I did finish it, but I was like, my heart broke. It was like you skipped out on the kissy bits, which is my favorite stuff.
Fair enough. I do have a question for you. Have you ever entered a florist shop on a whim based on what is in the window?
I have a very big block in terms of florist shops in the sense, like, I don't know what I'm doing when I go in there. So there's a rare occasion when I walk into one with any kind of like, it's more like, help me, let's get this over with. Cause I have to get a present for somebody and I don't know what I'm doing.
It is one of the few, I can only compare it to trying to walk through like the perfume, makeup, skincare aisles of department stores when I was an acne-stricken teenager, where I'm just like, no, don't look at me. Don't leave me alone. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear how you know better than I do. And that's what a florist shop is for me. Like, I know you know better than I do. I don't know what kind of dirt to get with this plant. Does this need a lot of sun? Does this need a lot of water?
Yes. I think the only time I like entered a shop because something so like moved me in the window was when I was passing this vintage shop in LA and they had a Groucho pajama set, like old, like it was like a long sack, like a nightdress that had Groucho on it. It was vintage. And I was like, like, I need that. And I was like, busted in. I was like, please, sir, like, give me that Groucho PJ. And he was like, that'll be $300. And I was like, bye. I ran out. There was like holes in it. I was like, dude, you can't sell that for $300.
Who is Groucho?
Groucho Marx.
Oh, that's what I thought you were saying. But then I was like, but that seems such a bridge too far in terms of like, who would put Groucho on a caftan?
It was surreal. And that's why I was like, I simply must have that. I need that in my life. And then the price was too high. The price was wrong.
What I'm hearing from you is you lived Little Shop of Horrors, but Audrey 2 was a Groucho caftan where someone put it in the window to lure in victims.
And they didn't have change for a $500 bill and I wasn't willing to give it.
No, you have to draw the line somewhere. Groucho, yeah. $300, fine. $500, it's not all the Marx Brothers.
We're missing three important, one less important Marx Brother.
I'm a completist. Call me when you get Zeppo. Otherwise, not interested.
Yes.
Also, one of my favorite weird things about this movie, and whatever, that's another tangent.
Yeah.
One of the major characters is a dentist and everyone has the very 80s yellow teeth.
Oh my God. I noticed that too. Steve Martin's wonderful yellow teeth.
But back then they probably looked white because now we all have whitening strips.
We never knew our teeth
could be this color.
Yeah. Totally. No, I noticed that too when he like leans into the camera. Also, he's just his dancing in this movie. There's one little move he does when he walks into the shop and he goes, oh, And he does this leg thing that's not even Elvis, but it's just so beautiful. I was like, that man, I love him.
I should have looked this up. I wonder if he was still with Bernadette Peters when he made this movie.
Was this before Pennies from Heaven or after?
I think it was after. They filmed in 85.
This movie?
Maybe early 86. They filmed this in early 86, at least.
I was just born. I was only just merely born.
You really missed a lot. There were wonderful things happening.
I bet.
Just a few years before, Marissa Berenson and I entered her birthday party on a white horse, and I fell off the back just as the photographers clicked, and she's the only one preserved in history. Studio 54. It's a Studio 54 bit. I don't know.
I worked with an actor once who was like of the Studio 54 era, and he told me that there were tables of meat, cold cuts, at crotch height at Studio 54 one time when he went. I was like, I don't want this. No, please. No, thank you.
There, I will tell you a story involving people who are still living when we finish.
Okay.
But it involves a legendary singer, actress, dancer.
Uh-huh.
And it involves a legendary male ballerina.
Ooh, girl.
And it involves under a table with a bottle of poppers.
Okay. Okay. Was there meat
Remind
on the
me
table?
When we finish.
Were there cold cuts on the
no,
table?
No, the meat was under the table.
Hey-o.
Oh, yeah. It was. Okay. Hey! That's my Reba. one of my questions in my notes is literally, is Audrey good at Ikebana? Which is the Japanese art of flower arranging.
Oh, right. I mean, she certainly touches them quite a bit and sort of fluffs them. There's a lot of delicate dabbing, which to me, if somebody was like, be a florist, that would for sure be what I would do. Mime floristry. It's
absolutely.
Like tapping them flowers, just pulling the petals.
There's also that amazing, there aren't a ton of comedy lines that really get me. It's more pratfalls or physical comedy in this one. Yeah. But the one line that always gets me is wedding. Oh, no. He says a funeral. And she goes, hand me the lilies. I don't know what voice I'm doing there. That's I think it's
lilies.
Like Tammy Grimes or we're one glass of iced coffee away from just full Holly Hunter.
I love it. My
I
favorite
Holly
moment
is Audrey.
Oh, my God. Just so grounded. My favorite moment, and I filmed it when I was watching, was when Seymour goes in to check out the like Chinese floor, like the Chinese shop that has like the strange, you know, I guess things that he cuts off and then like grows into different stuff. But he like finds nothing that day. And then he walks across the street and stands with like a group singing like the chorus of men. And they're all like facing one direction and he kind of looks at them and then like goes to take a position next to them. And it's just the cutest little moment. And that's when I knew he's still my biggest crush.
Rick Moranis. God, yeah. I mean, I don't want to get bogged down in how sexy Rick Moranis is. But honestly.
What is it for you?
The sweetness. Well, first of all, I love a shorty. I'm 6'1",
okay.
And I love like a 5'6", 5'7". I love to go to, like, I love to walk up to shorter statured men and just say, climb me like I'm a tree.
Would you say that to Rick? To Ricky?
He's too delicate. I would never.
He's too fragile, for sure.
I would pick him up in my arms and carry him to safety.
I love him.
You probably could carry him to safety as well.
I would He's try my darndest. Yeah, we're both tiny Canadians. I think that's what I respond to as well. He's like obviously Canadian. And he's got that like pout mouth, the sweet little pout mouth. And at one point when he's saying, I don't know. And then he goes, I don't know. And he has this like growl that comes in. Hands in pockets. Give me a break.
sweetness with a little growl every now and
yeah.
then. What more does a gal need? I asked
truly,
you.
Truly.
I also loved the ashtrays in the dentist waiting room.
Great detail.
One of those things where I'm like, never going to happen again.
Nope. waiting rooms probably won't either.
I will say, as Audrey 2 is dragging itself across the room to call Audrey, which mm-hmm. I love that Audrey 2 knows Audrey 1's phone number.
Yeah, that's so true.
But okay, sure.
And does that cute thing where he like
checks for turns, a coin.
And he also turns, he like twiddles the phone cord.
Yes.
Sort of, you know, bored.
I mean, can you imagine Martin Scorsese directing a puppet in the way that Frank Oz has directed this puppet?
I'm deeply grateful he did not direct this movie, I have to say. Same. I'm not the biggest, I mean, sure, classics, but I don't need us to be siding with the dentist in this one.
I was going to say, I don't need to see the domestic violence really glorified.
No, and like kind of sexy and for 3 hours.
No. 94 minutes. Like, that's my sweet spot.
Yeah, yeah. Please.
I can do anything for an hour and a half.
And mostly in shadow.
Yes, which I thought was also so great because it's more upsetting that you can't see how bad it is, that you have to use your imagination that this is happening.
And it's so true of those, like, living situations where you see through a window little clips of people's lives. Like, that's such a you know, yeah.
I have a question for you.
Yes, I'm just pouring water. I'm not peeing.
That's whatever you need to do. I have no judgment here.
All right.
Does Audrey ever realize that Seymour killed those people?
I mean, if she did, she probably, given her history, might actually like forgive that.
He saved her a fortune on Ace bandages and Epsom salts.
That's right. That's right. There's a lot of like I Love Lucy style, you know, wife battering kind of winks in this here.
But
piece.
Even watching it like what, 86, so 34 years later.
Yeah.
It never veers into grimacy.
Tell me what you mean.
I don't, every time that he hits her or he's threatening to her or she's blaming herself or saying that she deserves it, it tiptoes right up to the line of like, oh, this is so bad. It tiptoes uh-huh. right up to that line. But for me, it never crosses that line.
Uh-huh.
Into like, I think, unwatchable, this is a problem.
No, because we empathize with her. We're like on her journey. We like get inside of her experience and her dreams and stuff like that.
Yes. Now, yeah. The scene with the Chinese florist where sure. the urchins are dressed in the, I can't think of the word for that dress. But you know what I'm talking about. In the Mood for
sure.
Love, whatever, that beautiful dress that she's wearing.
Yeah,
that like maybe crosses the line of like, ooh.
Yes.
But again, this world is so heightened that you kind of give it a pass as, okay, this is like an imaginary world. So, okay, I'll just like that is 5 seconds. So I'll just close my eyes for 5 seconds and then get back to this
yes.
movie that's so good.
Yes. Not everything is going to age well.
No.
No. But it is like trope land as well. Like there's something about it that's like, these are the archetypes of this, you know, kind of cartoon puppet world.
Yeah.
And like, how do those archetypes then transcend the archetype or push out of it?
And they never play the archetypes for laughs.
No, no, it's so true. It's such a, I mean, I know we're supposed to like shit on it, but I
no,
love
no,
it.
We're not at all. No,
it's one of my flaves. I mean, love it to death.
This is you picked one of the few good movie musicals. I mean, a Chorus Line movie, like, there's not a ton that you can say about that that's great.
Right.
But Little Shop, like it, and also we didn't even touch on this. How awesome that we got Ellen Green preserving her performance that made her a star.
Yes. So this was her iconic performance.
Yeah.
This was the one. And did you, you didn't ever see her do that. You wouldn't have seen that.
No, I was at 54 at Studio 54 with Marissa Berenson.
Right. Of course. And I was in a diaper eating cold cuts. Do you feel like she, I don't know much about her. Did she come out fully formed as this kind of character outside? Like, did her work come from who she was, or did she create this from the work she was given?
I think she created this from the work that she was given. She had done, I think she's one of the few performers who starred in two Broadway musicals that closed before opening.
Oh, God.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so this was like her make or break moment, and it made her. She actually is the one who suggested that Audrey be a blonde.
Oh, interesting.
Which is now like such, like, this is the iconic look. And yeah. I think the only way to stage the show now, as both of us saw individually, or you with the clips, is to go completely in a different direction. So Tammy Blanchard does not have that same, like, crazy belt that Ellen Green has, but she acted the hell out of it. And she has like that Brooklyn accent. So it was just like perfect casting in that way. And MJ Rodriguez is just such a like brilliant performer in her own right, and brings all of her history to this character and what that means, so that there's an extra layer. Because really, Ellen Green is Audrey, to the point where when Jake Gyllenhaal did it, she reprised her role 30 years
later.
She had to.
Yeah, it's an interesting, because she occupies such a specific place in like the trope of a woman, like that sort of that, you know, like a beaten down, but still in love with the man who hits her, who hurts her. Like there is such, like there's unfortunately still translatable kind of echo that we can go back to, and it doesn't feel irrelevant. Like it doesn't feel like we've moved past that. So to cast somebody in it who embodies like a sense of what that pain is just interesting. That's really.
Well, and I think we all get so, when you were in New York, did you ever go to Marie's Crisis?
Maybe. What is that?
That's the Shotun Piano Bar in the West Village.
No, I didn't.
Oh my God. Okay. When life returns.
Yeah.
And you are back in New York, we have to go, because you would, it's just everyone drunk, screaming show tunes around a piano.
I love that. I don't even need to be drunk to be doing that.
No, it helps if you are, but no. And one of the big shows was Little Shop, and they would do like Skid Row, and they would do Somewhere That Screen. That was the quiet song, which all the quiet songs are like, or when I said, I'm going to have a cigarette. Can the adults please smoke?
You go outside.
And then they would do Suddenly Seymour. And so you think of the score of Little Shop as this big, belty, like impossible to sing score. But honestly, it's just how you approach Suddenly Seymour that is true. This is not like a crazy score in that way. Like, it's not a crazy Broadway Beltress score.
Right.
And it's so interesting that Ellen Green's performance of this one part of one song has become so closely identified with what the score sounds like. When so little of the score actually sounds like the end of Suddenly Seymour, where everyone's belting for the gods.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Because I was also looking at Rick Moranis in it, and that he does that, like, he has a great voice because he's just kind of an extension of how he speaks. Like, it's just very, like, articulated and kind of, like, dorky, and, like, he's yelling a little bit.
Oh, and I loved it.
Yeah, same.
Oh, it really worked for me. I mean, it might have been the Bud Lights I was drinking as I watched, but I don't think it was.
Wait, this is last night?
Yeah.
You're drinking Bud Lights last night?
Yeah. Why?
I why Bud Light seems like only a cartoon drink. Like, it doesn't, like, I don't see those in real life.
Well, yeah, I love that. It's not every night. I don't always have Bud Light. I do drink every night, but it's not always Bud Light.
Was it specific to this movie, or like, this requires a Bud Light kind of buzz?
No, I've just been like sitting on the floor in front of a fan drinking beer this past 2 weeks during this heat wave. And I like hit my limit with the hard cider last week.
Yes.
And I was like, I'm just going to, what do I want? Oh, this is half the price of that cider. Fuck. Yes. Yeah, I'm going to get some Bud Light.
And be a cartoon boy.
Yeah. So you just gave me the best segue I could possibly have asked for. Did you know this was a cartoon series in the early 90s?
I feel like I did see that at one point, and I don't like, there's like images of it online.
Yeah. So you can watch the intro. I think the premise of the show became Audrey 2 doesn't eat people. It's just a talking plant.
Oh, so it's just like a sassy friend.
Basically.
Uh-huh.
And the animation and the look and feel of it is very Beetlejuice cartoon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm here for it. I mean, I still wish Audrey ate people, but I'm here for that.
I mean, who knows what happens in later seasons? It could be like that Rob Lowe show that got canceled and they still had to film five more episodes. And he was like, guys, let's just go crazy. And it turns out that the series is about some lawyer. And it turns out that he was completely deranged and psychopathic and had invented this whole world. So
what show is this?
Like the Lion's Den.
Oh, huh?
Oh, yeah. So it starts off as like a legal drama, and then they get canceled. And he's like, who cares? They've got to pay us to make this anyway. Let's just go crazy. So no one was watching it. So they just did like all of these crazy things.
I love that. Actually, I have a Rob Lowe story that's related to musicals. I was working on a movie with him back in Toronto. This is one of the first jobs I ever did in Toronto. And he and I were sitting in like the tent, whatever. And I was like trying to stay in the moment. I had like a kind of emotional scene and I was listening. And he's like, what are you listening to? He was like smoking cigars or something. And he's like, what are you listening to? I was like, oh, I'm listening to Les Mis. I'm listening to Little Fall of Rain or whatever. And he was like, oh, let me listen. And he took my CD player, which I had, my Discman, and he listened to it. And I think he was singing along with it. That's my Rob Lowe musical moment.
Stop it.
No, I won't. I shan't.
I don't want you to. You're telling me about Rob Lowe singing to you.
That's what he would say. And with like a cigar in his mouth. It was like
I love that I just spent the last 30 minutes being like, I love sweet, dopey, short guys. And then you bring up Rob Lowe and I'm like, yes, bring him to me. Yeah.
Are you like into guys or something? Is that the thing?
No.
You just love all guys?
I like to have a bromance, you know?
Yeah. Just really good friends with them.
Just, I feel like Rob Lowe could have a really good time with me. Just like kicking back, drinking Bud Light, like see where the night takes us.
Yeah, just watching Les Mis.
I'm sure he would.
Oh boy.
I'm fanning myself. I've got the vapor.
Could you imagine if you watched Little Shop and you saw that Rick Moranis pout? What a sexual night that would be.
I actually have a giant fan with a peacock on it that is just out of reach.
No.
I know. I really let you down with my prop work today. I apologize. I apologize like for a, that.
A yes. Fan. Get it. Get it. Oh my gosh. It's on a hanger?
No, I had to take the hanger to get it.
Oh, can you thwarp it though? Do you know how to thwarp it?
No, I don't.
No.
I don't have any rhythm or flexibility. I can't do things like that.
Did you ever do musicals?
No, yes. I did a community theater production in small town Texas of The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Okay.
In the group numbers, well, there's no nice way to say it. A committee was formed and went to the director to request that I lip sync during all the group numbers because I was throwing them all off.
Well, yeah. Who was in this committee?
Everyone.
Do you remember their first and last names?
Travis.
Travis.
Daniel.
Okay. Gosh, what betrayal.
Well, it's not really a betrayal. It was fair, honestly.
Uh-huh. I used to do musicals. Actually, the reason I watched Little Shop was because my high school improv team, we had to do we were in this like improv competition with all the high schools. And one of the things you had to do was a style event. So you had to do an improvised something in the style of blah, blah, blah. So it could have been the style of a noir film or the style of a silent movie or whatever. But we did it in the style of a musical, a Broadway musical. And my teacher was like, you have to watch Little Shop. Like, that's the iconic. That is the iconic musical. I think because it's so like loves the genre, like it's so lovingly a musical.
Yes. And I think that that's why this is one of the more successful musicals of the decade. It is not trying to not be a musical. It is not trying to trick you into forgetting that it is a musical.
Yeah.
It is very much, here's the I Want song. Here is how they're going to, here's all the crazy shenanigans with the montage, with backup singers, with a Greek chorus.
Yeah.
Which also, where did the urchins go? Halfway through the movie.
Where do they go? They sort of, so the narration, we no longer have that. What is it? We don't have the anchor of somebody seeing it from the outside.
Yeah. So then once.
Because.
Oh, I think it's when Oren dies and he chops him up. I think the urchins disappear then.
So is there something, there's some kind of. There's some sort of like, it's almost like the second half of Into the Woods, like where we're sort of like left to our own devices. Like the safety of the structure is gone. Cause we've like, cause like someone's betrayed his true nature.
Do you read and think about scripts in depth for a living?
I've read a couple scripts in my time and I've read a couple books about whatever, script writing or whatever. I dabble.
I actually think, I really wish that you'd like shown up to be on camera with me with your Emmy. Speaking of prop work.
Just like, that's in Toronto this, just, in a box.
I just bring this with me everywhere I go.
This is my Emmy. I'll show you my Emmy. Who she is now. this is on my mantle.
Oh, yeah. I think that is a life-size Emmy.
It is. It's a bust, a lady's bust, plastic lady's bust.
So I have two final questions for you before we have to wrap this up. One is, before the question, one is a comment. I would love to see you as a Seymour.
I was so grateful you said that because I was thinking, I was like trying to cast myself in this just because I'm, obsessed with me, I guess. I was like, who would I be? And it would definitely be Seymour.
I mean, honestly, just Orphan Black it up and play all of them. You've got the range.
I don't have the voice for anybody. Well, I have zero voice, but I feel like I could talk it. I could talk it out. And I do think he and I have there's a similar vibe going on there for sure.
Okay, definitely Seymour. But I also think cut the musical numbers. Do a one-person Little Shop of Horrors where you film yourself as all of the characters, but only the book scenes, which are everyone's favorite parts of a musical anyway.
The book scenes? Is that the lines?
Yes.
The book scenes?
I've never heard lines?
That. What, is that the lines? That's when they talk to each other?
I learned that from Rob Lowe.
Yeah. He schooled me in musicals. I would love to. I would absolutely do that.
So my final question, real final question is, do you think Little Shop of Horrors, the movie, works as a movie without prior knowledge of the stage musical?
Yes, because that's the only way I knew it. And it works. It works. It works for me in so many ways.
I agree. And I think that even the changed ending is, as much as we both love a dark ending and see everyone die, I think that that is the wrong choice for this incarnation of the story. I think that you fall in love with both of them so much, giving these movie star incandescent performances, that you don't want to see them eaten alive and the world consumed. You want their love to survive and thrive.
Yes. And it is also, it's a subversively dark ending to be like these two people, one of whom has committed like negligent murder.
Yeah.
Like murder by negligence, by like not doing.
Yeah.
Gets the little white picket fence.
And it will eventually tear them apart.
Yes. I mean, cut to 3 weeks from now, when they're just like coexisting and just annoyed at whatever, at the floral arrangement picking, the petal picking.
I mean, she's going to run out of glitter.
Yeah.
That's going to be a whole thing.
Uh-huh. I can't imagine what their sex looks like, to be honest. Even though I highly sexualize Rick Moranis, I don't know.
I don't really know what sex with a woman looks like in general.
Fair enough.
I like Seymour and Oren. Yeah, I know exactly how that would go.
Well, you see a little clip of it as he's sort of, got him in the chair.
That was also cut from the after the preview screening. The whole like sex scene between Seymour and Dr. Scrivello.
Just them getting down to it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. What a shame! What a shame! People weren't ready. They weren't ready for it.
Different time. But I do want to say before we leave, you can watch the original ending on YouTube and it's an extra on the DVD.
I'm basically going to go right now to watch that and then also the cartoon.
Yeah, I think that you should.
I can't wait. I'm so glad for all this new information that you've given me.
Well, and I'm so glad that we got to do this because you are secretly one of the funniest people that I've ever spoken to. Or not secret to me, but like secret, in general, no one thinks like Tatiana Maslany is hilarious. I actually think that you're so hilarious.
Oh, thanks.
I need you to do like a big rom-com.
I would love to. Can it be with Rick Moranis?
I was just about to say, May-December romance. You and Rick Moranis will lure him out of retirement. Yes. Rob Lowe will play his skeezy older brother.
Yes. I can't wait. That's the one I'm the most excited about, is working with Rob Lowe again.
Yeah.
Well, I really need to do that again.
Yes. No, I believe that.
I hope we get canceled midway through the movie and then just get to do our own thing.
So also add the Lion's Den to your list of things to watch today. Because
yeah. Oh my God. I've got.
Don't think you'll regret it. Tatiana Maslany, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And loyal listeners, thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Movie Musical Madness. And please join us next week for another episode.
This episode of Movie Musical Madness was edited by Kyle Moore with theme music by Sunshine Music. And thank you for listening to Movie Musical Madness, part of the Broadway Podcast Network. You can find out more about the podcast and me at bpn.fm/Movie Musical Madness.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.